The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to the Spy for Rent. Spy, the number 4, rent.com. Spy, F-O-R, either one works. Spy for Rent, 790-3051, 790-3051, area code 205. Of course, we do the show every single week. Corey in the upper left-hand corner with Spy for Rent. We won't use her last name. If you do business with Corey, obviously, you'll find out what that is. And in the bottom of the screen, we have a very special guest here, Director of Alternative Dispute Resolutions Team at Cumberland Law at Sanford. He's also in counseling there for Webster Henry. He is Ben Warren. Ben, good morning to you, brother. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
Doing fantastic, man. Great to have you on Spy for Rent. And thanks again to Corey for joining us here. I kind of want to get people associated with what you do. And I think it's amazing because when you talk about insurance and insurance fraud, you've actually worked both sides of the fence here, correct? So you've worked not only for the side that obviously you're trying to get some things done with the insurance side, but also for the insurance company itself from a fraudulent standpoint. What side's funner to play with, or what side's funner to work with? And what have you seen working both sides? Because a lot of people don't get a chance to work both sides of the fence, you know?
Yeah, it's a pretty unique position to be in, and I'm grateful that I was able to be in this position. So I started out my career in personal injury law, working for a local firm down in Mobile, Alabama called Green and Phillips. They're decent size for the market. And then maybe 3 years ago, they decided to open up a Birmingham office. And I was tasked with going up there and running that office. So I handled injury cases, the gamut of them, right? So whether it's slip and fall, automobile accident, workers' compensation, I did some product liability, I did some medical malpractice, and I got to work a lot of stuff in that realm. And then a little over a year ago, I quit that job and switched to the insurance defense side. So now instead of representing the injured individuals, the vast majority of my practice is representing the insurance companies.
Now, was that by design? Did you see something from the litigious side to say, listen, I think I've got a better shot at making my pay supporting the insurance side of it?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, it was largely based on a personal reason. So the firm I work for now had an opening that came up down back in Mobile, which is where I'm from. And I wanted to get back home. Okay. So a lot of it had to do more with a personal reason.
Okay.
I enjoyed working the personal injury side as far as my ability to help people get the recovery that they are entitled to under the Alabama laws of torts. And then, but you know, as with any job, there are certain things that were good and bad about it, but when this job opened up, it allowed me to kind of leverage some of the experience that I gained over the years litigating cases on the plaintiff side. So now I understand it a little bit differently.
There you go.
Now defending the same types of cases that I used to bring to court.
Ben Warren, Ben Warren joining us here, Director of Alternative Dispute Resolutions Team at Cumberland Law at Sanford. Also, of course, a counsel there with Webster Henry. I don't think I'm outside the realm of telling people that when they turn the TV on, usually during the afternoon, you'll see a lot of law commercials. I watch Judge Judy, so I see a lot of law commercials. A lot of people say, why are these commercials on during the day? Because people that normally are hurt or not working or watching television during the day. I'm not one of those people, although I do like watching Friends every afternoon from 1 to 3. It's my good nap show. But there's also this feeling that, and I know how, and that's what I love about this show, because this is real. This is real stuff. And this is not a lawyer show, although we've had lawyers on. This is about private investigating and Spy for Rent and how to utilize that service. But it is quite the racket, so much so that now where people will get there and say, call me and I'll tell you what I think your case is worth. Has it gotten outside of crazy control, or is the point now where, and obviously you don't want to assume anyone's doing anything on purpose, but we know that's probably something that happens too.
Yeah. So you see, you know, obviously a lot of attorney advertising these days, and specifically probably over the last 20 years, it seems to have just blown up, right? And it's almost, you watch commercials now and it seems like every other commercial, there's a new lawyer on, or maybe you go through a commercial break that lasts a couple minutes and it's filled with a different attorney claiming they can get the most for you, right? And they're the ones you should hire. The Alabama bar specifically has pretty specific rules on what attorneys are and are not allowed to do in terms of advertising. And the vast majority of these injury law firms that do this type of advertising, they push the envelope. Yep. And they do it very consistently. And they inundate you with their brand, right? And that's their whole goal.
Sure.
Is they want you to think about them mm-hmm. all the time. And there's lots of statistics that go into that. And you're right. You know, the people that tend to be the more litigious after being hurt are those people typically watching TV shows in the afternoons and late at night. And so there's a lot of attorney advertising that gets done during that 12-hour period between, you know, noon and midnight, and sometimes even later. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten text messages from clients when I was on the plaintiff side at god awful hours of the morning.
Yeah.
Like 2 to 3 a.m.
We always just say, put your wallet away after 2 o'clock. If you're going to bed at 2 with a 10 and waking up at 10 with 2, that's fine. But put your wallet away, because you probably ordered something on Amazon you probably don't want to do. And Corey, I wanted to ask you too, because, you know, you have to work both sides of the fence. And obviously, what side is easier for you, or what side do you get most glory from or residuals from when it comes to the insurance business? Because it is huge business.
Yeah, well, I prefer to work the defense side.
Yeah.
Be honest with you, you know, personal injury side, you know, the plaintiff side, we're usually finding witnesses, serving papers. We might interview some people, et cetera. We do more surveillance on the defense side. And, you know, I support ADLA, the Alabama Defense Lawyers Association. So we're big supporters of them. And a lot of these big firms have in-house investigators. So you're competing with their in-house investigators. But, you know, that makes it fun a little bit, a little cat and mouse game, you know. You know, they've got that old, you know, retired state trooper or something that might be looking out at depositions to see if somebody's, you know, surveilling their client. And that's kind of fun to, you know, outwit them in their own little game. But, you know, I prefer the defense side.
Got a friend of mine who's coincidentally enough works security for a local college here, and got into a car wreck several months ago. And every time I saw him, you know, I'd ask him about how his case is going. And of course, he was suing this company, and he was throwing around some huge numbers, $385,000, $285,000, this, that, and the other. And I think they end up settling for like $175,000. But when all was said and done, he walked away from the case with $27,800. And I was like, was it worth it? He said, no, you know, in the course grand scheme of thing, he has medical stuff, but he said, once I got so deep into it. So when you see these things with the big price tags and stuff, the numbers look good, but it's never really what you get. And so be careful what you wish for, because it does seem to be, he said, it was so stressful to deal with that stuff. And again, the insurance companies, they have their lawyers too. Before we get into the spy for rent aspect, maybe this is something that you can certainly chime in on, Corey. We're talking to Ben Warren, the director of Alternative Dispute Resolutions Team, counseling law at Sanford, as well as his own counseling there at Webster Henry. Right now, all I'm hearing about insurance is I hear a lot of, and maybe it's because I'm getting older, I hear a lot of medical insurance, and I'm hearing about a lot of weather related insurance situations. Do you deal with those? Is that something you're seeing? I think there's this idea that the insurance companies are having record profits every single year, and I want to see both sides. That I just had some neck surgery, and I just got the bill. It was $334,000 for a 30-minute procedure, and I'm like, hold on a sec. If you guys are ripping out $330,000, I think I'm good with what I'm paying every single month for what I'm paying my insurance company. But what are you seeing? Has insurance gotten out of control? And is it something that needs to be overhauled? What's your thought on that, Ben?
Yeah. So there's multiple aspects to insurance, right? And there's insurance for, you name it, you can get it pretty much. And the whole idea, you know, historically behind insurance is that you pay a minimum amount of money on a yearly basis. We call that the premium, for a dollar amount of coverage that covers you for certain events. Just totally depends on what the event is, right? Whether it's personal liability, whether it's homeowners insurance to cover a loss of property, or whether it's health insurance to cover some kind of injury to your person, whether that's an injury that occurred just naturally as you age, or whether that injury occurs because of some tortious act of another individual, or maybe you're just clumsy, right? Yeah. You fell down the stairs, mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter, that health insurance will cover you for that. One of the biggest problems that I've seen in both sides of my practice has to do with health insurance specifically. So you see hospitals that charge an insane amount of money, And the retail sticker price of these procedures is astronomical. And if you don't have insurance, how on earth could you afford to pay for these medical procedures?
Yeah.
The answer is you can't, right?
Yeah.
So they basically force you into doing it. Now, on the flip side, these insurance companies pay, you know, 10, 15% of that number because they have contracts. And I'll speak in Alabama just because that's where my context is, but most states are similar. Alabama has almost a, or Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Alabama specifically has almost a monopoly on private health insurance in this state.
Yep.
And they have contracts with virtually every single medical provider. And they have so much leverage because of their market share that they can go into these hospitals and say, this is the rate we pay for this procedure. Take it or leave it. And if you're not in our network, good luck getting patients. And so what you see is hospitals end up, maybe they charge $10,000 for this particular diagnostic test.
Right? Yeah.
It's their retail charge, but they end up paying Blue Cross ends up paying them $1,000, sometimes less, sometimes a little more. It just depends on the type of test or procedure.
Yeah. So the truth of the matter is they're not spending $250,000 on a shoulder injury. And I think they would, because there's no way they could possibly be in business. What about personal liability and personal land, homes, stuff like that, where it seems like every time you turn around now, there's insurance companies. This is maybe something that would be a great question for you too, Ben, is are insurance companies, do they have to pay? I mean, just because you have a claim, is it a rite of passage to say, listen, I have damage to my home, you need to pay this? Or do we need to start looking at the small writing a little closer?
Yeah. So during after Hurricane Sally, I was actually still in Mobile, and I did some property damage claims on the plaintiff side. So I represented people whose homes were damaged by the hurricane. So I have a little bit of experience with that. And I don't know if you've ever actually read a policy for insurance that's been underwritten by one of these insurance companies. But good luck if you decide to try to read it. But you often will find massive amounts of exclusions and reasons not to pay, far more than you'll find reasons to pay. Ultimately, these insurance companies are businesses, and they're designed to make a profit. Now, the company that I mostly work for is State Farm. It's a mutual company. Mm-hmm. And so a mutual company has responsibilities towards its members to profit. And so these companies are designed to make money, just like any other company is. And so when you see things like what's happening in California, where insurance companies have basically pulled out,
yeah,
or in Florida, where insurance companies have pulled out, what they're doing is a risk-benefit analysis. They're looking at it as, how much money are we spending to insure people in this state versus, you know, how much are we making,
yeah,
premiums in, yeah, the state? And if that cost benefit analysis skews in such a way that they're paying more than they're making, they're out.
Yeah.
They're not going to stick around.
It just seems like growing up, generationally speaking, insurance was such a small 17, 18 bucks, depending on what you're being insured for. I actually had my voice insured when I first got into radio because I didn't know. And thank goodness I did. I never had to use it, but it was like $5 a month or something like that. And I would have gotten a because it was what I do for a living. And it seems like it was such a, even PMI stuff like that, like on homes and mortgages and stuff, it seemed like it was such a thing like, okay, insurance, yeah, we got that. Now it's such a cost effective wise, it's something you really have to look at in it. I mean, it's really important. It's a bigger chunk than it's ever been.
And there's lots of stuff too. So like if you have a mortgage on your house, the mortgage company is most likely going to require,
yeah,
you to have insurance on your home, mm-hmm, to protect their interest in your home.
Yeah.
And so in every state that I'm aware of requires liability insurance to have the privilege of getting a driver's license and, mm-hmm, operating a motor vehicle.
Yep.
And so laws and other people have essentially forced you into having insurance. It's almost impossible not to have insurance in some way.
Yeah.
But again, these companies are designed in such a way that if they're not profiting, then they're not going to insure.
Yeah.
And we're
not sitting here poo-pooing on insurance companies, because I know, sure, there's insurance company. State Farm is certainly, Chris Doris, a friend of mine, I've been doing business with him for 30 years. I'm certainly, there are some guys that are on the up and up and doing a wonderful job with that. Corey, Spy for Rent, spy4rent.com or forrent.com, 790-3051. I know I'm going to get this question, info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. What is the strangest or wildest insurance fraud type of case, Corey, that you've dealt with maybe specifically with Ben or with anyone else that you've had to deal with? Because I imagine people just think insurance companies got billions and billions of dollars, so you know you're going to shoot high.
You know, actually, usually they give us a small little bit. So they see what you can get. Is it, you know, is the claimant active, et cetera? We kind of get like a basis. We get a baseline of their activity, right? So, and then if something seems promising, they usually give some more money to it, because they're not going to just throw money at something that isn't going to get a return on it. But the craziest is probably, I like to call them the apple dumpling biker gang.
Okay. Do tell.
The craziest. So this guy, you know, supposedly can't do anything and all that. He can't walk. He's got back issues, whatnot. And man, I'm sitting back and you know, it's in the middle of nowhere. So I'm just waiting for people to come by. And then, you know, I see this guy has a bunch of motorcycles. So I'm like, okay, you know, if you're hurt, you probably can't ride a motorcycle very well. But so I'm sitting about a quarter of a mile away from the residence on a dirt road, and I see about 12 motorcycles pass. And I was like, that guy with the beard kind of looks like the claimant. Sure enough, follow him, get the tag and everything. But he has a whole gang. And so the whole day for like 12 hours, that's all they do is ride around. And he's got a little bitty like old revolver that looks like something you'd see, you know, in a lake or something after you shot somebody. But he was so proud of it. He wore it on his hip. He was super proud of it. And he was the ringleader, man. He's working on people's bikes, telling them what to do. You know, they stop at this bar, hang out. And he works on bikes, and then he has the little prospects or whatever. It's just like, you know, watching Sons of Anarchy or something. So some of the kids or the younger guys stay outside. They don't have the jackets yet.
Yeah.
And the rest of the guys go inside to the bar, and then they come out, and it was just hilarious. It was like a real biker gang, except I wouldn't be too scared of this biker gang. I mean, just the way they carry their guns and the, I mean, if they're really injured, I mean, they're not too scary either, but you know, they went all over the world just driving around. And of course, you know, he couldn't claim that he couldn't do anything anymore. Who can ride? I mean, I'd be tired after a 12-day ride, you know, or a 12-hour ride and then working, I mean, bending over, getting the wrench out and looking at bikes and stuff, putting them on the lift. It was just crazy. But he reminded me like a Barney Fife if he was a
yeah, for you folks that are out there, I promise we'll never reference the Apple Dumpling Gang again. That was something that I have not heard of since Chitty Chitty Bang Bang on Sunday night, Disney World or Disney. I totally forgot about Barney Fife and the Apple Dumpling Gang. Those were great movies, by the way. Those were fantastic movies.
My granddad would make me watch them.
Was Harvey Korman in those too? Was it Harvey Korman?
I can't remember.
I think Harvey Korman from the Carol Burnett Show was in those as well. So I've got a friend of mine who's, I use that word loosely. I know him and we used to go to Vegas together. He was part of a group and he was a police officer in Hamilton, Ohio. He was a friend of my father's and he was on the Cincinnati police force for, I don't know, 20, 30 something years or whatever. And, he would go to Vegas, but every time he went to Vegas with us, he was retired. And I'd always wonder, wow, you guys must have pretty good pension this time. And he goes, oh no, you know, I just settled another case. There were three different insurance cases where he got shot one time, which was for real. And I forget what the other two were, but he just had this smirky little grin on his face. And next thing you know, yeah, they gave me $85,000 to drop the case, blah, 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 blah. And it was just like, you know, it's like, well, how much longer are you going to be able to go to Vegas before you have to go back and do another case? Are there people out there, Ben, that do that are constantly going after, because they think insurance and I guess for the better part, just to get rid of it, depending on what amount of money it is, it's better just to go ahead and settle it, get rid of the guy. But how do you keep someone from continually doing that and coming after you over and over and over again?
Yeah. So that was going to be my counterpoint. I spent some, you know, a little bit of time earlier talking about, you know, insurance companies, they're designed to make a profit, right?
Yeah.
And so they make more money, the fewer claims they have. And so it's designed in such a way that they try not to pay out claims, which is why it can be so challenging sometimes. But on the converse side of that, you know, it's like the cat and mouse game that Corey was talking about earlier. You have people that abuse it and they make claims for things that they should not be making claims for. And that ruins it for everybody else, yep, ultimately, because you do have people like that. And I've certainly seen that. As an example, similar to Corey's, where, you know, you watch somebody, I do a lot of stalking on social media to try to find pictures or videos of activities that maybe they're engaged in that they probably shouldn't be engaged in if their injuries are as bad as they claim. Mm-hmm. Recently, I defended a case where this woman was previously shot in the back, lower spine region, and she had some pre-existing issues with that, but she had consistent lumbar pain for a long time, and of course the wreck made it worse. She'd been involved in over a dozen automobile accidents over the last 15 years.
Wow.
Which is insane. Most accidents I've ever seen anybody involved in over a 10-year period of time that does not drive commercially.
Like, yeah, bad luck.
Not a professional driver. Yeah, just horrible luck. Mm-hmm. She was at fault for some of them, but most of them she wasn't at fault for. But she was claiming, you know, from this particular accident that I was defending, all this additional pain and suffering, right? And it's so hard to parse through that. But I found a video of her twerking in the middle of downtown Mobile after clearly being at the bar with her friends. And my thought is I don't know how you twerk with a lumbar spine injury. Uh-huh. But she's clearly figured it out and she looks perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's people like that, right? That are serial insurance claimants.
Yeah.
And insurance companies do keep track of that stuff.
I bet they would. And we will not ask Ben to twerk during this show unless he wants to. Ben Warren, director, because of your lumbar, I know. Director of Alternative Dispute Resolution Teams at Cumberland Law at Sanford, also does counsel there at the Webster Henry. And of course, our good friend Corey there with the spy for rent, 790-3051, 790-3051. Something else, and this is pretty remarkable stuff because I'm learning, I thought I had this figured out, but I don't. People always talk about company vehicles. If you're going to get hit by something, you want to get hit by a company vehicle because the company's probably got a fleet, and that fleet, obviously, and for the most part, it does not. I got in an accident 25 years ago. I'm not going to mention the business. The guy ran a red light, just totaled my vehicle, and I was late 20s, and they were like, "You want an ambulance?" I'm like, "No." And I had a belt on, but I hit my head on the windshield the whole nine yards and didn't do anything. And I remember his insurance company calling me saying, "Hey, we'd like to give you $500 for your pain and suffering." And I remember thinking to myself, "Wow, $500? I wasn't planning on getting. All I wanted is my Monte Carlo SS back. You know, I wasn't getting that back, but I was like, wow, really $500? And I'm looking back on that thinking how much that case could have possibly been worth because it was a big company. Can you just talk a little bit about behind the eight ball, how some of these companies can even afford insurance? They're insuring obviously 18, 19, 20 year olds to be driving their vehicles and how careful they have to be.
Yes. So one of my other clients is American Interfidelity Exchange, which does exclusively commercial policies for 18 wheelers. And there are requirements by the US DOT for insurance. And so, you know, you've got a large policy if you get hit by an 18 wheeler. Smaller commercial vehicles, typically not as much, but typically they're owned by companies. And there's something in the law called agency theory, where if you're acting on behalf of a company, mm-hmm. then the company is responsible for your actions, which includes your negligence.
Does that include driving the vehicle even when you're not working?
It could.
Yeah.
It depends. If the company has given you permission to drive the vehicle to and from job sites or to and from the office,
yeah.
then there could be liability there. It just really depends on the situation.
Gotcha.
Generally speaking, if you're driving a company vehicle home, no. Generally speaking, but you can be driving a personal vehicle for the company. And through agency theory, the company is still liable for your actions.
Gotcha.
That's a little bit more difficult, but.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, Corey, so walk me through it. Let's go nuts and bolts here. Give me a particular case, maybe a recent case or something that has not happened yet that I'm sure will, where you would reach out to Ben, and how would that phone call normally go down when you're talking about surveillance, private investigation, and then using an attorney or counselor for some type of insurance situation?
Well, you know, usually so. We're talking about big companies with these insurance companies and whatnot. You know, usually it's like, you know, they're insuring like a grocery store, a retail store, you know, something like that. And then the first thing I got to do to get it started, just like a divorce case, is they got to serve the papers, right? That's what starts the clock. So, and they have a certain amount of time to do that. you know, actually that's the plaintiff side, but on the defense side, really Ben's just going to call me and tell me, hey, we got this, this, and this, this is the budget for this. I make a plan and say, okay, we can fit within this budget, see what we got. And then from there, we'd make a plan if anything's there or not. Now, sometimes there is, nothing there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's legitimate sometimes as well. I think the majority of time it's not 100% blatant. It's people exaggerate what their injuries are. It's yep. So it's fraud, but it's not like, okay, I have a broken back, but I don't really have a broken back. It's fraud. Oh, I have a strained back, but I'm, you know, acting like it's broken and I'm never going to be able to work for the rest of my life. And I will say this, they're going to pay for a long time. So if you get that claim, they're going to be paying. They might come back 10, 15 years later. So you got to really think to yourself, if you're listening and that's something that you want to do, there's going to be somebody like me. It may not be immediately. It may be 10 years from now. And I don't know about you, but yeah, no amount of money to me is worth having to live like a hermit in my house. Sure, you can't even enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, and then our insurance premiums, just like Ben was saying. So all these people, you know, what's driving a lot of these premiums up is a lot of this fraud. I mean, mad at those people. No, get mad at the insurance company per se. Get mad at these people that are claiming all this stuff and it's not legitimate. So that's why the insurance company has to keep on paying stuff out and making it more expensive for us.
It does. Yeah.
At the end of the day, I've got to make money. Yeah. Tony, you got to make money. Everybody's a business. We have to make money.
A couple of bad apples make it hard for everyone. Let me ask you this, Corey, and I've been wanting to ask you this question since we started, because I think this is probably where the majority of the business comes from. I've got a neck injury. And then I get in a car wreck, and then I'm trying to blame that car wreck on the premeditated or predetermined neck injury that I've already had. It's kind of like having a dent on my right-hand corner and then hitting it even harder to make sure that it, so I can get the whole thing paid for. How often do you have to go back and look at someone's records before the insurance situation and find out, hey, listen, you had an accident in 1987 or you lost a limb in 1993 and now you're sitting there trying to tell me you just lost your ankle because of this car wreck?
Yeah. So we do what's called a medical canvassing. So, and there's a variety of ways to do it. You know, it's like a background check. So you've got to look at where people have lived, et cetera, the hospitals. There's a lot of HIPAA stuff that you have to toe the line. Just like when you're looking at asset searches, you've got the fair, Credit Reporting Act that you've got to make sure you're staying in line with. So you've got to make sure you're not getting into privacy concerns when you're looking at this stuff. So, you know, they might be able to tell you, for instance, that they've been at this hospital, and then maybe the attorney can subpoena something. But sometimes you can get more information too, but it's very touchy subject. But we do what's called a medical canvas. Just like Ben said, if we can do social media, I mean, there's a lot of things that we can do now that make it cheaper too. I don't even have an investigator out there sometimes when we're doing surveillance. You can have remote surveillance. I can sit on my computer depending on the case. And I can have one of the guys in the office zoom in, zoom out, pan your residence. And, you know, if somebody goes looking for this in this car, there's nobody in the car, or it could be in hidden somewhere else. But that's another thing. You've got to make sure that you're not violating any privacy laws, whether it's they have a reasonable expectation of privacy at that location or you're not on private property. But there's a variety of tools. So it's always going to be Ben's going to give me a call. This is the budget. We formulate a plan, and we always try to make the most cost effective plan to get the evidence that the insurance company would need.
And you've always done that. Ben, real quick, final question. Typically speaking, if you're going to go ahead and try to pull one over an insurance company, how long are you talking from start to finish before you get a check in the mailbox? Because these idiots, I'm thinking to myself, you're asking for $350,000 and here you're twerking in the middle of a Walmart parking lot. What were you thinking? Well, eventually I think you probably just get tired of faking it and you probably just go, you know what? There's no chance someone's going to have a kid, but there's cameras everywhere now. I mean, hell, I can Google Maps your ass in the Walmart parking lot if I want to.
I say this both to the clients I represent now on the defense side, and I said this to the clients I represented on the plaintiff side before. You know, typically speaking, when you've got a lawsuit, you're going to average about 2 to 3 years for the whole process. And that's after it gets filed.
Yeah.
And in Alabama, you've got a 2-year statute of limitations. So you're talking about 4 to 5 years. I think the oldest case I ever worked on was about 8 years old before it fully resolved. And it's a time consuming process because there are deadlines that the court sets. And once it's in the court system, you know, there are certain things you can do to push it forward, but trying to get, you know, doctors' depositions and everybody, all these different parties involved that get involved and get them all together at the same time to go through the case as it needs to be gone through, it takes a decent amount of effort. And then something comes up and, you know, this date you've had on your calendar for 2 months gets pushed out, and then you've got to find a new date.
Yeah.
It's months finding a new date. And then, you know, it happens so often. And then you, during depositions specifically, you'll often learn more information. And as you learn that information, what you're having to do is now go back and almost start over the discovery process. And then you're getting more documents, like Corey said, from subpoenas from different hospitals that maybe weren't disclosed to you initially. And you're constantly going through this process.
And I would think too, there'd be a time relevancy issue here too, because after 8 years, whatever problem you had could get better or it could get worse. And so you're probably looking at that as well. Ben, great stuff, man. Director of Alternative Dispute Resolution Teams at Cumberland Law at Sanford. You're in the house now. You're in our little lineup here. So you're welcome to join the show anytime. Corey says you're good to go. Corey, of course, with Spy4Rent, spy4rent.com or forrent.com, 790-3051, 790-3051. We do this show at least 5 days a week on TKR. If you download the TKR app, we've been downloaded over 100,000 times. We have 18, 19 different shows. This is one of my favorite shows that I get to co-host because there's so much information. We have some fun too on the show. So check it out. If you miss it on TKR, make sure you go wherever you get your favorite podcast. We're available on every major industry. And of course, the Tony Curry Radio YouTube channel, what you're watching right now. You can check out our beautiful mugs every single week right here on Tony Curry and of course our podcast network. Gentlemen, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thanks. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Ben.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.